Would you betray me with a kiss? That's the voice my guest heard from Jesus in the corner of a closet that night her 15-year marriage was hanging by a thread. That's the moment Leanne Murphy says broke open her understanding of forgiveness. And what she shared next stopped me cold. Today, I get the pleasure to talk with Leanne Murphy, who's been married to Mike for almost 38 years and wrote Becoming a Husband and Becoming a Wife. We talk about covenant over happiness, forgiveness as a command before it's a feeling, and the night Jesus met her in that closet. Make sure you hit like and subscribe wherever you like to watch or listen. Also, take a moment today to hit the 5-star rating and review. This is a huge way you can play a part in encouraging marriages all over the world. Please enjoy my conversation with Leanne Murphy. Miss Leanne Murphy, welcome to the Marriage After God podcast. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
I'm glad to be here.
So I always start off by saying I love meeting new believers in different parts of the country and just doing similar things but different. And we all get to use our gifts and talents growing the kingdom. And so I just pray that this conversation today would be super encouraging for all of our listeners. And I'm sure it will. So Leanne, why don't you start by sharing who you are, how long you've been married, where you live, what you do, how many kids you got, all the good biographical stuff.
All the good stuff. So my name is Leanne Murphy, and I am married to Mike. We've been married for almost 38 years. We have two sons. We've helped raise a couple of nieces and nephews along the way, had the pleasure of having them live with us. We have two biological sons. They're both married, Patrick and Colton, and they're married to the beautiful Alexa and Lydia. And they have, Patrick and Alexa have two sons, Graham and Hayes, and Colton and Lydia have one son, Beck. So we have three grandboys. We live in central Louisiana on a beautiful piece of property that God gave us a few years ago, and we're on a lake. So I get to do a lot of fishing and a lot of just sitting out by the water. Yeah. Oh. It's great. It's actually an oxbow of the Red River, so it kind of has a little bit of that river life, but it's controlled access, so it's really lovely out here, and it's just a beautiful place. We are just thrilled. We never thought we'd be here, and God made it happen at a particularly pivotal time in our lives. My husband had just been diagnosed with cancer, and we found this property, and we've been looking for years, and it was really kind of this moment of, we believe and we prayed for healing. We prayed for this property and they've collided, and do we move forward? And we just did. And God gave him the healing and we built the house and here we are. Yeah.
So yeah, Leanne, I'd love, if you're okay with it, to dig into that story a little bit more in a little bit. But I first want to just highlight 38 years almost is just incredible. Anytime I get to speak to another person who has been married, I mean, I'm coming up on 20 years, which blows my mind to think about, because I can't even know where the 20 years went. It doesn't really make sense to me. But 38 years, you've almost doubled my marriage age, which is awesome. And it's so inspiring. And I think more and more us young couples, I still think I'm a young couple, but now I'm realizing I'm becoming in that other stage of life, but getting wisdom and guidance from couples who've been married longer, been doing this thing longer. And so I'm excited to chat with you about your story. And also, I love your husband's name is Mike. My dad's name is Mike. My brother's name was Mike. Lots of Mikes in my family. So easy to remember that. 38 years, you guys now live on a piece of property that you believe God gave you. And there was healing involved in your husband. But it's so awesome to hear also that you're a grandma. How many grandkids did you say?
I have three grandsons.
I'm so excited for one day. I'm not that far away because my son's 13 and he's, all my kids want kids of their own. So I'm excited to get into that world.
It's an incredible place.
Yeah. So share a little bit more about, 38 years, what would you say is the number one thing that got you to where you're at today in your marriage, staying married? Because I'm sure it's all been easy, correct? Like, super easy, no struggles, no hardships. I mean, you named one already. But what would you say is one of the things that has gotten you and Mike to this place today?
I think the reason that Mike and I are here at 38 years and still glad to be married, thankful to be married, is because our covenant was with God. I think for both of us, even though I don't think we could have articulated it that way when we got married. We were both believers, but we really thought we were marrying one another. But at the core of it, when we hit trouble, we realized that we had really made a commitment to God. My commitment was to God and to stay married, and Mike's commitment was. And in fact, if we had followed the way of most marriages and we had followed the guidance of counselors even that we went to at some points, Mike and I would have ended our marriage at about 15 years. There was infidelity at that point, and a lot of heartache and a lot of difficulty, and we stayed married, both of us fully committed to our covenant with God and to giving our children a stable life, even while there was chaos in our personal lives. And so God carried us through that, and we survived that, and it was because of the commitment to God on both of our parts.
You know, that's something I feel, like you said, if you were to listen to the world and the way they go, and you were listening, even some counselors, which is common, the way even Christian counselors might counsel in the way of like, hey, I think you should move on. I think you should separate. And maybe that's okay in very rare circumstances. I just want to make a blanket statement on that, but the covenant part of it, that agreement that you have with God, that covenant you have with God, that you weren't just marrying Mike, you were making a promise, you were making a decision, a covenant with God. That's something we've missed. This whole generation for the last, 80 so odd years has forgotten that. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think it's because we've lost track of what marriage is. And again, this doesn't apply to the world necessarily. They can't understand the concept of this. And so, but in speaking to believers, I think my message is, if we really believe the Bible is the truth and we really believe what God's taught us in it, then what we understand is that a marriage is a covenant that represents Christ's covenant to the church. And if we are fully aware of that, and we look just at Christ and the church, there was sacrifice there. There's forgiveness there. There's healing there. There's brokenness that has to be sanctified. And so I don't think either person in the marriage is Christ in that allegory all the time. I think both of us have to step into that role at different times. We have to be the one that is sacrificing for the marriage. Sometimes we're the one that's causing the sacrifice of forgiveness because we are both human. But I think when we realize that that's what this is about what Jesus did for his bride. He sanctified her, he washed her, he presented her to himself as glorious because of what he was willing to do and because of forgiveness. We're both called to do that in our marriage, and I think that's why we have survived. But if you don't have that basis, then when you're not happy, and they're all points of not being happy in marriage. That's the big dream buster that I share with young marrieds and those that are first getting married. There is going to be a time when you're not happy in this marriage. There's going to be a time when your partner is not happy in this marriage. But if happiness is what's driving us, if we think this is about fulfilling myself, we're doomed almost from the outset. And so I think we fell into that trap from time to time. I think that's why there is in so many marriages, infidelity. I think that's why there is divorce many times. And I'm not saying divorce is never the only viable option. Sometimes it is, and that's heartbreaking. But I think far more often we make it the viable option because we've lost track of what's really what we're called to. And so I'm just grateful that God led us through that. I'm grateful that we can say to other people, there is hope. I think that was something at the worst of our marriage, it was hard to find hope. It was hard to find a book or a counselor or even a good friend that could say, hey, you can get through this, because they hadn't been through it perhaps, because they'd seen other people fail going through that. So we were desperately looking for hope. I particularly was desperately looking for hope and not finding it. But I found it in God, and he got us through it.
You're making a really good point. I mean, the covenant aspect, it's what's happening is, and all of us that, everyone that's listening in our marriages is placing our decision to be in that relationship and that marriage and what it is outside of us, outside of happiness, outside of circumstance. It exists with God. It exists somewhere in that same way the covenant in the Bible, when God makes his covenant with Abraham, when he makes it his covenant with his people, It was not contingent on them. It was contingent on him. He made his covenant with himself and with them, but he upholds his side no matter what, and he encourages us to do that. And that hope that you're talking about also exists outside of us. It's in a person. It's in Jesus Christ. It's in something that he's done. And ultimately, like you mentioned, like there might be some circumstances that divorce is warranted. But even in those circumstances, don't we want as believers the ultimate goal, the ultimate reflection of the gospel is actual healing and restoration from Absolutely. Both parties, like no matter what sin has been involved in. And we are all sinners. We were talking about this with our kids at Bible time this morning is that like we are sinners and we mm-hmm. need a savior, and he redeems us and then teaches and helps us through his Holy Spirit to be different. So ultimately, like with you in your story, it sounds like there's some infidelity. It sounds like we all have our stories. There's something always that's going to bring heartache, going to bring broken trust, going to bring hurt. But the ultimate heart of the Father that we can desire to adopt for ourselves and for our marriages is healing and restoration, is reconciliation, is redemption, is not just brokenness. Like, let's just be broken, remain broken. But so I love that, because in your story, maybe you had warrants to end it back then, but how much more powerful and beautiful is your story and God's testimony in your life because you guys fought against that?
Yeah.
No matter
and
how
hard it was. I think that is, for me, at some points, it was like there was such a clear calling, a clear desire on God's part to draw us back in. I remember at one point thinking, okay, how does somebody do that? How do you betray somebody? And these words in my head, sitting in the corner of a closet sobbing, how can you betray somebody? How did you betray me with that kiss? And for some reason, that a kiss was such a hard concept. And Judas, and I heard that voice almost immediately. Judas, would you betray me with a kiss? He said that. And at that point, I knew that it was God saying to me, I see you. I know exactly where you are. I'm the only person in the world at this point, only person in the universe that knows where you are. Because no one else knew at that point. I had shared it with no one. It was just between me and Mike and that heartbreak. And at that point, when I heard that voice, it wasn't just, I know where you are. It was, I've been where you are. And I went through that so that you can be forgiven for the times you've betrayed me. And when in that moment, I thought, I've never doubted Jesus would forgive me. I've always known he died for me. And how do I now refuse to extend that same forgiveness to someone else? And so it was just, he just met me in that moment and said, I know exactly where you are, and I've been exactly where you are. And he walked me through that.
I want everyone that's listening, I'm hearing this from my own heart. This is exactly my own testimony in my marriage, not your same situation, but how God came to me and what he reminded me of. He actually brought me to that same spot in the Garden of Gethsemane and pointed to me and showed me that for the joy set before him, he went to the cross. Though we betray him, though we spit on him, though we, his bride, would not readily just be like, oh, we're going to, you know, be faithful to you.
And if only we could.
Yeah. But he understood that the frailty of us. And I think that's so beautiful that God came to you and he showed you that he doesn't just see you. He personally, Jesus Christ, knows what it feels like to be betrayed and knows what it feels like to continue forward, and gave you hope and encouragement to forgive your husband.
Right.
That forgiveness is such a big part. I think there's a lot of people, and I actually want to dig into this a little bit more, because I think this is a big deal for a lot of people. We think that forgiveness requires the other person to change first. We think that forgiveness requires the other person to come and repent to us first even. But forgiveness, that's not how Christ forgave. Christ forgave the whole world for all sin, for all eternity, on the cross.
Backwards and forwards.
Yeah. Pre-me coming to him and saying, I'm sorry. Pre-me coming to him and repenting of that sin that he forgave me for. But the forgiveness is just the start inside you That's the first start towards reconciliation. Reconciliation takes two people. Forgiveness takes one. Jesus forgave, regardless of us coming to him. But us coming to him and repenting and believing in what he did is what allows the reconciliation to take place.
Absolutely.
So how, I mean, God came to you and encouraged you, but tell me what that the power of that forgiveness did. First of all, in you to start that process. And then how did that, you know, spill over into your husband to start seeing that transformation in him?
So I just want to follow, you know, the word forgiveness has the word, you know, that syllable for the foreshadowing, the foretelling. It happens before anything else, and mm-hmm. you're giving it. It's not being earned. It's not being bought. We didn't earn or buy what Jesus, he paid for us. And so I think mm-hmm. that's huge. And I think when you are able to do that, there were points at that place. I was certainly in a place where I didn't know if my marriage would survive. I didn't know what my mm-hmm. husband would choose. I didn't know what was coming down the pike. At that point, I didn't even know where bottom was, honestly. But I knew that I would forgive Mike because I had been forgiven so much. It was so real to me from the time I was a little bitty girl, very real to me that Jesus died for me, that the blood that was shed there was shed for me. I've often been so thankful that I wasn't alive that day because I'm not sure that I wouldn't have been one of the ones saying crucify him. You know, I mm-hmm. grew up in a little bit of a legalistic background. I like to know that I know that I know and mm-hmm. feel like I'm on the right side of things. And so I'm so grateful that I live on this side of Calvary and get to know this side of the story, and grateful that I was raised in a Christian home. You know, I often wonder why all these wonderful things have happened so that I could know Jesus from the time I was a little girl. And so in that moment where I heard him say, "Would you betray me with a kiss?" I knew he was there with me. I knew that if I really loved Jesus and really understood his love for me, I had no choice but to forgive, regardless of what came next. I think it was in that quite honestly enabled my husband to get his feet back under him, because it wasn't a matter of, am I going to forgive you? It was a matter of, is she going to stay or is she going to leave? It was a matter of, his decision was his decision. Mine was made. And mm-hmm. I think that helped him overcome the shame. There's so much, anytime we all sin and we all fall short, but when we sin or we fall short to the degree that it's hurt other people, where it's made us question ourselves and who we thought we were, it's so hard to recover from that. Shame gets hold of us. And mm-hmm. I think if the devil can't take us out with the sin, he'll take us out with the shame. I mean, I think that's his MO. And so to get through that was really tough. And I think it took some of the fear, some of the shame away to know that there was forgiveness there offered. And so that was the gifting of that, but it wasn't, and I will say this, it wasn't to save my marriage. I didn't know that it would, but it was to keep my relationship with the Father right, you know, because as we forgive others, he forgives us. It's a cycle. It's this beautiful mm-hmm. spinning out of control snowball of love that we can be a part of. And I think that's what kept me there, knowing he saw me.
Yeah, that's something we need to remember. Just what you just said is, it's not just a good idea to forgive. I mean, it is. It's good for us. Like you felt better, yeah. But it's a command. Like, if Jesus can go to the cross to forgive our sins, pre us caring that he did that for the whole world, even those that will ultimately deny him, you know, until hell.
Mm-hmm. And I think we have to get hold of the fact that, you know, it wasn't just Judas that betrayed Jesus. We've all mm-hmm. done that at some point in our life. It wasn't just the Pharisees and the Sadducees who doubted him. It wasn't. We have all done that. And in that, we're forgiven. And I don't know, for me in that moment, it was so clear that I had done to him everything and more than had ever been done to me. And so it was very much that parable, you know, the guy forgiven of, you know, I don't know, it's like 100,000 days worth of labor. How could I turn around and be that servant that throttled somebody else over a few denarius? And so that was just crystal clear to me in that moment, in that closet, in the corner, underneath my coats.
Here's a thing that I believe the Lord showed me when it comes to forgiveness, especially from that parable of the two servants that owed all the money to the king. When we withhold forgiveness, just like the servant that, you know, owed a few hundred denarius to the guy that was just forgiven a life, you know, infinite mm-hmm. lifetimes of money that he couldn't pay back, but he wants him to give this denarius, we forget that technically the denarius that was owed to that man was the king's also.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because if the man owed so much, then every single penny that was owed him, any wrong done to him, and it was also the king's.
That's
and so
right.
The forgiveness should have been passed down, not because he was forgiven, but because it wasn't his. And
that's
so
right.
When we withhold forgiveness, we're withholding a forgiveness of a sin against us that Jesus forgave already. So the sin that your husband did against you was forgiven on the cross also.
Yeah.
And so what we do when we withhold forgiveness is essentially elevate ourselves above Christ.
That's the
warning that we're getting in Scripture in this command is not that we weren't wronged and that we were hurt and those are very real things to us. Mm-hmm. But when we withhold forgiveness, we're essentially saying we have more of a right to withhold this than Jesus did. When Jesus ultimately is perfect and all the sin of the world was poured out on him. And so it's like us going and shaking, you know, how could you do this to me? And Jesus is like, I forgave that one though, just like I forgave yours. That's a hard thing to realize, but it opened my heart and mind to being like, there should be nothing that I can't forgive. Now that doesn't mean that every relationship will be reconciled.
Right.
But I should be able to forgive everything because those things that I want to hold on to, Jesus forgave even.
That's right.
And that it leads me back to the gospel. It leads me back to like, oh, I should, regardless of me and so-and-so are made well, regardless of me and my wife are made, you know, perfect again, I can have a heart for them and point them back to the one who forgave them also and ultimately forgave them to make them right with God. So forgiveness is a huge thing, and I think it's something that we need to practice better. It's a dangerous thing to hold on to is unforgiveness.
It is. So that's kind of our story in a nutshell. So these books that I wrote were actually my oldest son came to me one day and said, I think she's the one, and I want to propose. And I had a like almost panic attack moment, like, oh, I know how hard this can be. I know mm-hmm. of the challenges. Have we told him everything? Have we set the right example? Have we said the right things? Have we prepared him to be a husband? And so I decided I would write him a letter. I processed by writing. So I thought I'd write him a letter. Well, it turned into like 21 or so letters. And so I went ahead and printed them out, and I took them down to Staples, and I had them bound into spiral, and I put them in this little leather, like stripped out the middle of a journal and put it in a leather binder and gave it to him before he got married and said, hey, there's about 21 days of letters here, and it's about a month before your wedding. So I really want to invite you to read these and write back about what you're thinking, you know, about what your real commitments are as y'all get closer to the wedding. And so I had really written it for him and his brother. I says, oh, don't tell Colton anything about this. You know, someday when he's dating, at that point, he wasn't really dating, maybe he'll get married and we'll give him a copy of it. And so fast forward 3 years later, Colton marries this sweet little thing that's been a part of our life since she was 6 years old, my best friend's daughter, his best friend's little sister. And so at the party that night celebrating their engagement, Patrick said to Colton, oh, now you get the book. And it was like such a sweet moment for me. I was like, oh, well, you remember the book. And so Lydia looked up and said, oh, wait a minute, do I get a book? And I was like, Of course you do. And so I scrambled and rewrote it for a girl. And so that's, those are how those books came to be. And then Focus on the Family picked them up. Yeah.
Real quick, just say the name of these two. They're devotionals, correct?
They're companion journals, and then they have a devotional in them, and then a journal that you write in afterwards. And so it's Becoming a Wife, 21 Days of Preparation for a Daughter of God, and Becoming a Husband, 21 Days of Preparation for a Son of God. And so they follow the same format, and some of the chapters are almost identical. Some of them are very different, because some things are very different when you're talking to a girl as when you're talking to a young man. And so they're designed for you to read together. And then there's a place where you journal afterwards, and you can share that with one another. And then a year later, there's an anniversary journal for each of those. And so they're really great for gifts, like I did for mine. Yeah. You know, I gave it to my children as they were getting married. But they also work really well for premarital counseling. We have some people that are using them in their premarital counseling process.
Hey, Marriage After God friends. Thank you for your continued faithfulness and listening each and every week. Jennifer and I have often shared with you about how important prayer is in the life of a believer. It's so important, in fact, that we're told this in 1 Thessalonians. Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. It is God's will for us to pray, and we want to inspire you to begin praying for your spouse and marriage every day. This world hates marriage, and so does our enemy. Because he knows the power that your marriage is meant to have in this world. He knows that if you and your spouse are praying and chasing boldly after God together, that the impact Christ will have in and through you will be powerful. So we need to be praying more than ever before. Our heart is to encourage you, along with everyone who listens to this show, to be praying for your spouses and your marriages, to be strengthened, renewed, healed, prepared, and empowered to do the ministry that God has for you to do in this world together. So, Jennifer and I would love to invite you to join the thousands of other couples in taking our 31-day marriage prayer challenge. This is a completely free and fun way to build a habit of prayer in your marriage. All you have to do to join is visit marriageprayerchallenge.com and fill out the registration form. Once you do that, you will begin to receive an email every day from us during the 31 days to not only remind you to pray for your spouse, but we'll also give you various topics and prompts to help you know what to pray for. We dare your marriage to start praying like never before. Start the challenge today at marriageprayerchallenge.com.
Well, take me back. So you've been married 38 years. You have your old children now about to be married. And you said you were like freaking out. You're like, wait, did they give them everything they needed? Like, are they ready? And I feel that now with my kids. I'm like, yeah. I don't even know if they're seeing everything from us. If I'm telling them all the things, how do I prepare them all that, you know, for marriage? What was one of the first things you wrote in the first letter? For your oldest son. It's your oldest son that was getting married first.
My oldest son, Patrick, okay. Yeah. And so the first letter was keep Jesus first. He's the Alpha and the Omega. And if he is at the center of your marriage, if you recognize this is not two people getting married, this is a triangular relationship. And Jesus has to be kept first. And that's really where it started. In fact, the first chapter and the last chapter of the book are keep Jesus first. You know, you start and you end with Jesus. And, so that was really where it started, because I know that's what carried us. I knew that's what carried us through that time. I knew it's what carried us when we lost my brother. I knew that's what carried us when we had children come into our home that hadn't been part of our lives before his death. So I just knew if they have that, and I think probably you feel the same way, it's probably the same prayer you're praying for your kids, that you marry someone who also believes in Jesus and you walk that as a covenant with Jesus. I knew that if they heard nothing else and they held on to that, then everything else would be doable. Everything else is figure-outable after that.
What kind of calls to action did you give to your son in order in that encouragement of keep Jesus first? Because you've seen him grow up, you've raised him, you've given an example to him about your own faith. What are some of the calls to action you gave to him as he's stepping into this new marriage with his new wife?
Yeah. So one of the harder messages for me as a mom was cut the apron strings. You've got to realign your allegiance. You know, your allegiance has always been, unfortunately, both of my boys and their wives are believers, has been to Jesus. And to your parents, you know, you've been a great son and you've been a joy of our lives. And and we've been kind of that authority role, even as a young man. He was very respectful as a young man. And to say that has to end, your allegiance to us ends here. You have not just an extension of our family, but you have a new family. And now you're the head of that family, and you're the source for your wife, and you're the protector, and that allegiance has to move. And so that was one. Another was, you know, you've got to be intentional in where you commit your treasure, right? You together have to agree, this is where we're going to tithe, and this is what we're going to do with our time, and this is what we're how we're going to raise our children. So it was about aligning with Jesus, not only in the headship of this family, but aligning with Jesus in how you give your time and your resources, your intentionality, yes. And then how you fight, you know, and part of my message to them, because my husband, shockingly, I thought we were been married for about 15 years, and I had a friend call me and say, today in Bible classes, like, we're having this class, and all the men in there were like, finally admitted that they think there's something fundamentally wrong with their marriage when there's a fight. And I was like, oh, that's a bunch of young husbands. They'll figure it out. And then I said, so my husband, and when I said it to him, we've been married for about 18 years at that point, he looked at me like, and I said, wait a minute, tell me you don't think that. You don't think there's something fundamentally wrong when we fight. And he said, well, it does concern me. So I made sure with the boys in these books and in my message, you're going to fight. That's natural. Mm-hmm. The challenges don't fight with her, fight for her. And when you can make that shift. And so there's a lot, there's five chapters really about how to fight well, and a message that I feel like is in Scripture. Mm-hmm. And so those were kind of things, you know, you've got to be intentional that you are doing what honors Jesus in this marriage, and you're doing what honors your wife in this marriage. There's a hierarchy of honoring that has to happen.
I just want to touch on something you brought up about cutting the apron strings. And you said it was hard for you because you're the mom. And what you're essentially saying is you're no longer under your mom and dad. You are your own man. You have a home that you're leading. We're separated. So not that we don't have a relationship, but the relationship's fundamentally changing. I think this is something that a lot of husbands and wives on different levels struggle with.
Absolutely.
There's some unhealthy apron string still attached and allowed to be there, and almost like a this is going to be this way, and that's okay. And to the spouse, you better not stop it. And I just, what was the biblical foundation you gave for that encouragement? Because I love it, by the way. I think it's really like launching your son and saying, you can do this.
Well, it's the very first advice God gave, right? And there was no father and mother. And yet there in the garden, he said, for this reason shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. He was saying that when Adam didn't have a father or mother, but he said, this is so important. I'm instilling this here. I'm saying it right now. And I think it's important because I think it's important for both. You know, daughters tend to think, oh, dad can do everything, right? I mean, if you have a good relationship with your dad, and well, my dad this and my dad that. And so the natural tendency, even as a young wife, can be, well, let me ask my dad, or let me get my dad. My dad knows how to do that.
I'm looking for a husband for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Instead of turning their allegiance and trusting him. And then I think also for sons, it can be that thing about, well, my mom always made this at Thanksgiving, or my mom always kept the house looking like this. Our families of origin set some expectations for us because it's what we've grown up knowing.
Yeah.
And we bring that into it. And so sometimes it's kind of this family of origin thing. Sometimes it is a parental authority. And sometimes that's where we go for advice. And instead of turning to our spouse, we go, oh, I need to call mom and ask her what she thinks about her. I need to call dad and ask him what he thinks. And in our early marriage, at one point in time, there was even a statement made by me about, well, my dad wouldn't have done it that way. You know, there's an implication of there's a better way, and that I have more trust in someone else. And so to be able to cut those apron strings and to be able to say, regardless of what's normal in my family of origin or what my preferences are, now we have a new family and we have to forge our own kind of chart here. You have to, we make our own path here under the covenant of God. But there are so many things in marriage that aren't right or wrong. They're opinions, they're preferences. And if we don't carefully sever those apron strings, and suddenly we're building our house the way our parents built it. And there, well, there's and conflict there.
Also, like undermining your spouses or unnecessary comparisons, which lead to a lot of heartache and struggle. But I want to differentiate it. Cutting the apron strings, like you say, or separating yourself is not necessarily no longer needed. It's a different level of need. So it goes from you're under authority of your mom and dad to now they are moving to a like mentorship. Like I can, because I'm sure you would want your sons to be able to reach out to guys and also their wives. Hey, we're going through this thing. We'd love advice. We'd love opinion. We'd love some direction and guidance. But that's very different than, oh, when my mom comes over, she, gets to dictate how things go. Or when my dad's here, he gets to say, or looking at them, like you said, more trust in them, more reliance on them than your spouse.
And we have such a benefit of this biblical viewpoint, right? We still have parental relationship, and we have this mentorship and older women teaching younger women and older men setting example for younger men. I love that. And, on the other extreme, we have this worldview where right now we're having so many families that are estranged, they've cut off relationship. Yeah. We hear all this about toxic, I had a toxic childhood, and so I've cut my parents off. And I think we probably all had some toxic childhoods because we were raised by human beings. And not to minimize that, but there is something about, again, going back to forgiveness, extending forgiveness to my mom and dad for the things that they did that are the things I perceived that they did that they may not have even done, and vice versa. Yeah. So we're very blessed to have a strong relationship with our sons, but it's a relationship that is outside of the authority, right? They're under the authority of God, and now they have authority in their own homes. Their wife and he, their wives and they have authority in their own homes. They have the authority under God, but we're no longer in that authority structure. We're now, what you said, mentors, supports, peers to some extent, a little bit older, but still, we're both married. We've all had children, so we can lend that support to each other and love and fun. And oh my goodness, the grandparent thing, get to watch those grandboys. That's the best thing in the world. Solid relationships, right? You want those really strong relationships, but it's the understanding that it's a different relationship now. And there is an allegiance and an alliance in that family for which you're responsible. Right. We're no longer responsible for them. They are no longer responsible to us, but we get to be great partners and friends and supports. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it's a goal that we should all strive for as husbands and wives in our homes while we're raising our children. I want my kids to look at me and my wife as a source of wisdom and truth and example, not just because we're mom and dad. Like we don't get default position in their life after, and I'm speaking of when they get married and move out of the house and they're on their own. I want them to desire that for me. So I have a responsibility to raise them in a way right now, leading them in the way, that they should go, so that when they get older, they don't depart from it, teaching them the word of God, showing them by example. But also letting them know that we, make mistakes, letting them, showing them that we need to ask their forgiveness at times, so that they desire it from us when they get older, that they say, I can trust my mom and dad with these questions, with these situations, because they've opened that up to me, but not just by default. And I think a lot of people think family gets some sort of privilege out of default, out of genetics, rather than like having an example that is earned it and deserves it and allows it and it has that open arms, because like you said, like there's a lot of estrangement. Sometimes that's necessary, but if we as the believers, me raising my kids, we walk in such a way, you know, we desire to be that for them. It doesn't mean that they will, but
that's what I'm striving for.
Yeah. I'm striving to raise them to trust us. And that takes humility. It takes transparency. It takes a lot of apologizing at times. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I think that's really awesome. I love how these books came out of your own story with your own boys and writing letters to them. I think that's really beautiful. I've been mulling this over. I'm just realizing there's a lot of things that I've developed and thought about theologically in the Bible, and I'm realizing, like, how do I pass all of this on to my kids? How do I, like, make sure they know all of these things? Like, it might come out in passing, and so it's been making me want to write those things down, which I might eventually do, to give to my kids. So what's another?
Well, it's really just such a gift, and
you're good.
I was just saying, it's such a gift to be able to get that from you, not have to live through that or dig that out and be able to build on that. I think that's the beauty of that, you know, that generational faith that's passed on. It's not just that I can't take your faith and make it mine, but I can certainly learn from what you learn. And I love that, being able to learn. I say all the time, this book is a whole lot about this is how you change the flat, you know, when it hits, or better yet, avoid this pit hole, you know, this pothole rather, so that you don't get the flat that we got. And there's a whole lot in these books about avoid some of the mistakes we made, learn from some of the things that we found to have worked. And if it helps you at all, then it's my joy that we've helped you maybe avoid one of the missteps along the way.
Yeah. Could I ask, if you don't want to, you don't have to, but is there a section in the book you talk about avoiding mistakes where you talk about what you and Mike went through when you're in that 15-year range?
Yeah, we do in the book. It was interesting because when I wrote the letters, there was none of our story really. And it was just, but these are the things I want you know. When Focus on the Family got hold of it, Larry Whedon, who is the editor-in-chief there, edited the books, and he called me and he said, okay, this is after we had the contract. He said, now we want you to put your story in it. Like, you talk about the heartbreak and you talk about the trauma, but you never tell the story once you tell the story. And I almost went, whoa. We're out. Yeah. You don't want that messiness. So we ended up putting the story in it. And so, interestingly, my children, at the ages they were, it would have been very traumatic for them to know what we were going through. And a lot of times in marriages, you don't show that side to your kids, and probably shouldn't. You protect them. Yeah. It was very important to us for our kids to have a stable home and never to have doubt that we were in it permanently. We never wanted them to be afraid. Yeah. And so we had not shared that with the kids. Even as adults, we had not shared our story. And so before we could tell the story in the book, we had to tell the story to our children. And so we've shared that with them. So the book now has that in it. So there's a section in the book that talks about boundaries and setting those boundaries up in a way that honors your wife, and what those look like at work, at church, at home. You know, where are those boundaries? And so, because we wanted them to avoid that, and we wanted them to know it can happen. The book talks about not only us and it happening to us, but all the people that have David, a man after God's own heart. You know, who else can claim that? Can you imagine having God say, who's a man after my own heart? He struggled with boundaries with women, clearly struggled with boundaries with women, married to several, had concubines, and still ended up committing adultery with Bathsheba. And so we want to think it will never happen to me. I'm walking with the Lord. That's a line I won't cross. I don't think if we can point to David and say, even someone at that place, in that covenant relationship with the Lord, can step off into that. It's unwise to think any of us are above that or beyond it. And so setting with those boundaries. We talk about that in the book. We talk about sex in the book. One chapter, nothing graphic, because I don't think you need graphic, but very clear about what is God's commitment with sex. What does he want for us? That this is a God-given, God-blessed, God-ordained, wonderfully fun aspect of your marriage. And it should be that. And it should be something that is... it's the one thing that Adam and Eve so clearly had. You know, they were together, they were naked, and they were unashamed. And I think that's the thing that we're supposed to be able to be in our marriage. And so few of us go into it with those clear ideas and that kind of a Bible-based concept of marriage and sex. And so we talked about that. So, we talked about some of the harder stuff in the book and knowing you're writing it to your son. Sometimes that was interesting, but we wanted him to hear it from us, and we wanted to be reminded of what he had heard from us at other times.
Well, I'm really appreciative that you did decide to share your story. A friend of mine is working on something, and I responded to him and I said, "Hey, I think you need to put your story in this." And so it our stories and what God's doing in us, it's not that it's about us, not that our story has the power. It's that God did something in us and brought us through there. It's why God often reminded the Israelites of all the things that he did. So they passed these stories down, not just as stories, but as reminders and warnings. And so everyone that's listening, I just want to tell you, like, if you're going through something, just know that the intention is that God is going to use what you're going through, because he wants to use all things. The Bible tells us all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. And so are out of the often the deepest hurts, the deepest struggles, the deepest brokenness, and the redemption side of it, that story is pointing to Jesus, and that's how we talk to people. So you sharing that hardest season of your life is now going to bless hopefully thousands of young adults getting married and having wrong ideas of things, because we all do, not having enough wisdom from our own parents, a lot of us, you know, having brokenness in our families. It's good to get those stories. It's good to get reminded of what God can do. And to see that in the hardest moments, that's not the end of the story. That is very well just the beginning of one. So I appreciate that you were willing to get over that fear and that and actually share your story.
Well, thank you. It is our hope. And there's a verse that talks about the comfort with which we've been comforted. Mm-hmm. I think that's very powerful. And our stories, you're right, it's not about us, but our story is the story he wrote.
Yeah.
And he wrote it so that it would be comfort to somebody else. And I think we have to be open and willing to share that. That's certainly what I was looking for on the worst days. I was looking for someone who could say, you can survive this. There is hope. And there is. I don't care where you are or how deep or how dark it is. God can bring you out of that. And his desire is to do that. And he will move heaven and earth. Psalm 18 is one of my favorite, where it says, he heard my cry and he was moved, and the heavens reeled and rocked, and he came down on a cloud like he was a warrior king, and he was throwing darts, and he rescued me, and he took me to a high place. I mean, Psalm 18 is so powerful, this vision, this warrior God. And it doesn't matter where we are in the depths of Sheol and tangled up and drowning, he will come and he will rescue. We just have to turn to him. And that is victory. That right there is victory.
Amen. Leanne, thank you so much for sharing your story, being vulnerable.
Thank you for letting me.
Please remind us the name of the books and where they can get them and where they can find out more about you.
So you can find them on Amazon and just almost anywhere. Focus on the Family, Tyndale Press. They've been wonderful about getting them out there. But it's Becoming a Husband, 21 Days of Preparation for a Son of God, and Becoming a Wife, 21 Days of Preparation for a Daughter of God. And the byline on them is Karen Leanne Murphy.
Mm. That's so awesome. So all my listeners, go check them out, especially if you got young adult kids that are about to be launching into the season of getting married. This is a great opportunity to give them something that will encourage them in that journey. Leanne, thank you so much. I'll make sure to put all this information in the show notes so people can find you, and God bless you.
Thank you so much.